On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Clueless. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, as this one is particularly rambly and covers a lot of ground outside of the film, but it probably helps you to enjoy it if you have seen the film. So if you do proceed, just be aware that there are light plot spoilers for the film Clueless. Enjoy.
Why, hello there, Mr. Johnston.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, and you're wearing a vest. Looking good.
I am wearing a vest. Do you like my sultry vest outfit?
Yeah.
I'd wear it just for you.
Thank you. This is episode 20, I just realised.
Episode 20? Oh, my days.
We've done over 20 hours of nonsense chat.
But I think there's a lot of excellence found within our chat.
Oh,
personally.
Yeah. Diamonds in the rough.
For certain.
Yeah. How's your week been? Wait, I feel like it's Tuesday now. So when did we spoke last week on Wednesday or Thursday? So it hasn't actually been a whole week, but.
No, it hasn't. We're well ahead of schedule. Yeah, it's been all right. What did I do? I went to go and see It.
Mm. Any good?
It's very good. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's funny in places, scary in others. It's got Finn Wolfhard in it.
Oh, the kid from Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly. Who has possibly the best name out of anybody.
Yep.
In the universe.
I wish I was called Finn Wolfhard.
We can call you that if you like.
Although there's a cartoonist called Steve Wolfhard who is very good as well.
Oh right.
And I don't know whether Steve Wolfhard is better because Steve is kind of a more ordinary first name. So it sounds like a janitor who could kick your ass.
Steve Wolfhard.
Yeah. Yeah, check him out. He's really good.
I quite like Finn Wolfhard though as a name.
Yeah.
The only sort of thing that you could like possibly build upon is if like the first name was ever so slightly different, so it was like Flynn. So you've got those like Errol Flynn overtones. So
Finn Wolfhard,
do you have a brother called Flynn? And if so, is he better than you?
Stranger Flynn's.
Stranger Flynn's. I'm very excited about the return of Stranger Things, by the way.
Yeah, me too. I really loved Stranger Things, the first series. It took a couple of episodes, I think, for me to really get into it, but everything about it just really worked in a way that you felt it could easily have fallen very, very flat with it being kind of hitting that nostalgia market, pushing the nostalgia buttons. But no, it did it well.
Yeah, it's absolutely great. Really entertaining show. I've also finished watching the entirety of the latest season of BoJack Horseman.
Oh shit, I haven't watched that at all yet. I need to get on that.
You need to get on it. It's amazing.
I've been reading quite a lot actually instead of watching TV. I got given this manuscript by my friend Paul. Shout out to Paul. He's the pitcher on my softball team, or one of the pitchers. But he's my like workhorse pitcher, the guy who I send out to battle in pretty much every game. And then when he gets tired, I go into pitch. He's an editor, mostly of fiction in translation, but he sent me this manuscript of a book he's working on by a guy called Sergio de la Pava, and it's a really incredible book. It's really hard to describe. It's about American culture and social media in the future, but there's also this kind of American football thing built up with it, like kind of a minor league football thing. So I'm trying to work out some cover designs for it. So like reading an advanced manuscript of a book is always a strange thing, but it's really, really cool. And his first book is called A Naked Singularity, and I've been reading that as well, and it's like really, really thick. So I'm kind of deeply embedded in that at the moment.
No, that sounds amazing.
And I've also been reading What I Talk About When I Talk About Running by Murakami, because, as you know, I signed up for a half marathon and I'm trying to get some running inspiration. It's a really, really good book where he just talks about quite openly and plainly about his life experience and health and running and stuff. And it's very inspiring, and not in a kind of you can do this way, more in a kind of I did this, maybe you could too. This is how I run my life. It's all very ordered, you know. It's great.
Oh, cool. Amazing. I have to say that it's very embarrassing, but I've not really read anything in a while.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult to find time to to read, because it feels like it's such a huge sort of like undertaking.
Yeah.
Whereas like when I'm watching something, I can kind of just veg out, or I can put something on in the background whilst I'm working, because I end up writing for the website a lot in the evenings. I think I'm slowly drifting into Garth Marenghi territory, where before too long I'll have written more words than I will have read, which is terrifying. But I generally sort of like pick up things like Kurt Vonnegut, Bret Easton Ellis, where it's like generally they're like punchy, shorter books where the way that they're written is really interesting, more so than the story, and then that kind of like takes my focus in. But yeah, I really need to start reading again. It's not good for an English grad to be like, I don't really read that much anymore. It doesn't matter.
But I find that I always try and wind down by reading fiction in the evening, for at least for like the last half hour of the day before going to bed. You know, I don't try not to look at any screens or check my phone or anything, and it really, really helps. So I always have like a fantasy novel to read before I go to bed. So that's when I do my like reread of The Wheel of Time. So I often get distracted or like fall asleep or I'm too tired, I get like 6 pages through, so it's probably going to take me the rest of my life to reread it at that pace. And yeah, then I read kind of non-fiction or literary fiction throughout the day, so on my commute and stuff. Like you get the bus to work?
I do, yeah.
Can you read on the bus, or does it make you feel ill?
No, and it's too short a ride. So I just listen to podcasts. One book series that I'd recommend, if you want something that's vaguely fantasy-y, but you don't want to read like however many books are in the Wheel of Time series, is it 13?
I think it's 13. Yeah, the last couple are by Brandon Sanderson, because Robert Jordan died before he finished it.
Yeah. I would recommend reading the Gentleman Bastard series.
Good name.
By Scott Lynch. And like they're kind of fantasy. There's like wizards in it and shit, but it's more sort of like a sort of like fantasy working of like a sort of heist, of a heist sort of style thing. So yeah, I really recommend them. They're really well written. They've got the kind of like world building which I've not seen since Gormenghast as well.
Oh, nice.
It really feels like a vibrant universe that he's created.
I know you're a big fan of the Gormenghast.
I am indeed, yeah. Those are some good, incredibly dense books where it feels like you're being hit around the head with a solid grilled brick.
Nice.
But yeah, I highly recommend those. The Gentleman Bastards.
Yeah, I believe Scott Lynch is published in the UK by Galanx, which is one of the imprints of the company that I work for. Having spoken to a couple of people who've worked with him, apparently he's a great guy.
Yeah, I've heard that he's lovely as well. Really lovely fella.
Yeah. Cool, I'll have to check it out. I also wanted to get your thoughts on, just because I'm curious, what do you think of Darren Aronofsky?
Darren Aronofsky?
Apart from his hilarious name.
I have mixed thoughts on him in general. I'm actually really excited to watch Mother because lots of people seem to hate it.
Yeah, everyone's hating on it at the moment. I haven't seen it either. I thought... I'm never going to see that because based on my experience of his previous film, I think I've seen two of his films. I've seen The Wrestler and Black Swan. I absolutely loved The Wrestler. I thought that was a wonderful, brilliant film. And then I absolutely detested Black Swan. I thought it was awful. I thought it was a piece of shit. And Mother looks kind of similar. So I was like, I'll pass on that. But now that everyone's hating on it, I am genuinely very curious to see it.
It's probably the next film I'm going to see at the cinema. Because they're showing it at our pretentious local cinema that shows lots of art house movies, and it might be the kind of place where it might be a little bit more appreciated. So, like, I generally like Aronofsky, but I think he's a little bit, people fawn over him a little bit too much.
Yep.
So, like, Pi is a really interesting movie, his first feature. Requiem for a Dream is one of the most gut punching pieces of cinema I've ever seen in my life.
I haven't seen that.
It's great, but you want to cry afterwards. And then like, yeah, The Wrestler is an underappreciated film.
I think I cried at The Wrestler actually in a number of spots.
The Fountain is really good, but quite odd. And then Black Swan, I think what really works about Black Swan is not what people really praised it for, in that like you kind of know, you know exactly where that film is heading.
Yeah.
But like, you've got those weird bits of like body horror thrown in where she's like sees herself becoming the swan and she sees her dance partner becoming the swan. You've got a really amazing supporting cast, possibly more so than Natalie Portman, who I think is a little bit flat in that movie in comparison to people like Mila Kunis, Vincent Cassel, Winona Ryder, who I think will put in amazing performances.
Yeah.
And then sort of like, and then there's a little, there's a few bits later on in the movie which I kind of laugh out loud. So like, I don't know if you remember, there's a bit where all the paint, all the pictures on the wall start moving and staring at her and like gurning at her.
And yeah,
like, a lot of people are like, oh, it was so shocking. But like, when I saw that, I kind of gave a little giggle.
No, I think I thought that was really stupid. I think at that point I was done with the film. I felt that it was oppressive to watch it. And I think people have said the same thing about Mother, so I'm probably still not going to like it, even though I'm curious. But it was an oppressive experience. The music and stuff was all too loud. All of the arrangements of the Tchaikovsky pieces he'd chosen were too booming, you know, and it was all just so like kind of, here's some loud and dark shit all in your face, and it's to do with ballet and whatever, and I couldn't get behind it. But maybe, see, I'll give it another go.
I had no problem with that side of things. I quite like an oppressive movie.
You like a bit of booming?
Yeah, loud, booming, oppressive movies, loud, booming, oppressive music. I'm totally on board with, because I think like that's a good way to use artistic media to make people uncomfortable. And I think Black Swan worked in that regard, but I think it was a little bit too on the nose. Not so much with its themes, but too much with its story. I think it could have been a little bit more obtuse, which apparently Mother is, so I'm very excited to see Mother.
Yeah. And I really like Jennifer Lawrence as well. I feel like I can't think of anything where she's been that like bad, apart from the last two Hunger Games films, but that's not her fault.
See, I got bored of the Hunger Games movies too, in because I loved the build up and the world creation and everything like that. But then they always descended into a bunch of kids run around and hide in the woods, and like I have too much other things to do with my time than to watch that.
But that's what was good about it. I like the kind of kids hiding in the woods running about and electric shocking and killing each other and stuff. That's all good. It was when it started to become a sort of weird love triangle, but also sort of pseudo political stuff. It really didn't work. I mean, I believe it follows the books relatively faithfully, but yeah, first two are good, the last two are absolute dog shit.
I was totally out of that series when I found out that originally in the books, all of the evil demon dogs actually had the faces of the other kids that had been killed, and they didn't put that into the movie. I'm like, come on, you want to frighten some kids? Put that in. That's going to scar them for life. I feel like to make a good Hunger Games movie, it needed to be much more violent than it was.
Yeah.
It kind of just shied away from everything difficult, like showing kids killing each other.
Yeah, I think the books are actually much more violent. I mean, I tried to read them and I couldn't get past the first two pages because it was so badly written. But first person present tense, I can absolutely fuck off.
But the problem is that those kind of things, it's already been done better by other people as well. So you've got like Battle Royale, for instance, is the archetype.
That is an awesome film.
And then you've got The Running Man as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, I mean, I love the movie, but I don't know if you've ever read the book.
No, the book I picked it up at work.
It's really horrible.
Sitting on my shelf.
By Stephen King under the name Richard Bachman, which is when he was trying to do things that weren't about spooky clowns killing people.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, not at all. But yeah, he wanted to write outside of his comfort zone, I suppose is the way to put it, and see if people still like appreciated his writing. And I think, wasn't there some quote where someone said something along the lines of Richard Bachman is the writer that Stephen King wishes he was, or something like that.
There was something like that.
Yeah. Which I always think is great. But yeah, no, so Running Man, the book is wonderful. And the movie, of course, is wonderful as well, because you get to see Arnie in a spandex suit shouting one-liners and killing people.
Thursday, it'd be before this episode goes out, so yesterday on the day this comes out, Stephen King's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Stephen King.
Yeah, I know, because obviously the company I work for publishes him, and yeah, it's the second year in a row we're doing a thing called King for a Day. So it's a huge Stephen King promotion. I'll probably get some free Stephen King shit. Who knows?
Oh, I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
But I'd like to see
I have one more thing to share before we get into the movie chat. Harry Styles.
Oh, okay.
of One Direction, he's done this cover of The Chain by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, okay.
Radio One Live Lounge, and it's bloody brilliant.
I have to say that his song Sign of the Times, I like it. Even it's a very slow ballad. It's very kind of 60s-ish. I hated it at first, but it really grew on me, and it keeps sort of jumping into my head at various points.
It's really good. Like his solo stuff has been wonderful, and yeah, I really recommend that you listen to this cover, because yeah, it came on the radio and it's like, oh my god, it's so good. Like, it's really, really, really good. Much better than it should be, and much better than like 90% of the stuff that gets done on Live Lounge as well.
Oh, cool. That's in the, you know, I love Fleetwood Mac and they're very sacred to me, so I could definitely imagine that going wrong, but I'm all right. I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's well good, bro.
I was admonished by a friend of the podcast, Adam Molesky, earlier this week for saying that song was the Top Gear music, when of course it's not. It's the bit, it's the from Formula 90s music. Formula One. He said.
How very dare you.
Yeah. So sorry for besmirching Formula One by trying to attach right-wing douchebags to it.
What is the song from Top Gear? I can just hum it in my head. Yeah. But who did it? Or is it just a random piece of music for Top Gear?
Someone who I hope falls in the Thames. No, that's not fair. Obviously, it was probably just a gig for a working composer who needed the cash.
Dear. Well, much like all of us.
Yeah. This is true. Cool. So, yeah. Shall we get on to this week's film, which is episode 20, special, Back to the 90s again, which I think we have to do every 10 episodes, I guess, is the rule.
But what, we need to return to the 90s.
Yeah, because first episode was 10 Things I Hate About You, the second episode was The Bridges of Madison County. Episode 10 was The Bridges of Madison County, so episode 20, we're in the same ballpark.
Alrighty, okay. I'm on board with that. That sounds like a good rule.
Yeah. Unless when we get to episode 30, you want to just do Bridges of Madison County again, of course.
The Bridges of Madison County 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, a sequel. That's what the world needs. Or we go see the musical of The Bridges of Madison County. Or we try and find like a dodgy recording of it from the theater, and then we watch that.
I think we try and find a bad reworking of it in some like village hall, and then we go and see that instead. Or we put it on ourselves.
That is the kind of thing that would be on in that village hall opposite where your parents used to live, I reckon.
It is, actually. Yeah, it totally would be.
Yeah, I'm down for that. But Clueless is a vastly superior film in every sense.
It is.
Although I have to say, when I went into it, I was like not sure if I'd seen it before, and it turned out I had seen it before. And all of the scenes, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that, but I had forgotten it. I'd seen it, I think, maybe a few years ago because Claire had it on DVD. But yeah, I think it says something that I didn't really remember much of it, which is that actually it wasn't probably as good or as memorable as some of the other 90s films that we've discussed, but it was still a fun and enjoyable watch. So yeah, how do you think it holds up against, say, 10 Things I Hate About You, which we have to measure every film against because that's the law on this podcast.
Should we measure Mother against 10 Things I Hate About You?
Yeah.
I think like with Clueless, there's something special about this movie, but that perhaps it perhaps doesn't hold up as well with time as 10 Things I Hate About You. But there's still a real place in my heart for this film, and I think it's really, it might come down to the fact that it was released so much earlier in the 90s.
Yeah,
that like this kind of like it paved the way for movies like 10 Things I Hate About You,
for sure.
Because it kind of does things in that kind of tongue-in-cheek way, but just that much earlier, if you know what I mean.
Maybe there couldn't have been a 10 Things I Hate About You without Clueless first.
No, I really don't think they could, both in terms of its structure, the way that it builds characters, the way that it messes around with genre conventions. So like, it's another one of the movies that's based off something old, like we've talked about many times before.
Some old shit.
Some old rubbish.
That we may or may not have had to study as literature students.
Yeah. I mean, like, everyone knows that anything older than you are is, like, well boring.
Yep.
So it always has to be retold in a romantic comedy set in a high school.
Yeah. That's the law. It'll be, that's why I haven't been to see Dunkirk, because it's not set in a high school in Seattle.
It's not like the foreign exchange students throwing water bombs at some other students.
Yeah.
So like, you have no time for it. So Clueless, for those of you who don't know, Clueless is based on Emma, the Jane Austen novel, which I don't know if I've ever read Emma.
I haven't read it, but no. Claire's a big fan. She gave me a good plot summary.
Yeah, so like, it's one of those plots that like everybody knows a little bit about, and yeah, Clueless is effectively a solid retelling of that, but set in a high school with Alicia Silverstone.
I read on the Wikipedia page that an early draft of the film also tried to work in elements of adapting Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus, but that was then dropped from the film at a later stage. Famously romantic Shakespeare play, Titus Andronicus.
That is an incredibly romantic play, I've got to say. I mean, it's up there with Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I also found out that there is a link from this film to the greatest actor of all time, Nicolas Cage.
Really?
Yeah.
What link does Cage?
This is a thing we need to do every episode, is work out if there's a direct link from this film to Nicolas Cage. And in this case, it's the stereotype of what the character Cher is a valley girl. And I was reading up on the idea of the valley girl, and it seems like apparently the first sort of pop cultural artifact to really make use of the term was a 1983 film called Valley Girl, starring none other than a 19-year-old Nicolas Cage.
Oh, Nicolas Cage.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not. No, I've heard of it, but never seen it.
And then I was in a... so we have to watch that at some point, I think, because that looks really, really great, but one that seems to have gone under the radar. But very, very young, hot-looking Cage on the pictures, and apparently it's good. It had a very solid rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But then, obviously, I was browsing through Nicolas Cage's Wikipedia page, as you do, looking for information on how many castles he owns or owned or whatever. And then it turns out that a few years ago, he was in jail for a count of like violence or assault that was later, the charges of which were later dropped. So I don't think he actually did it. But he was in jail for a couple of days, and his $11,000 bail was posted by none other than Dwayne Dog the Bounty Hunter Chapman.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So obviously Nicolas Cage and Dog the Bounty Hunter are friends.
That's amazing. That makes me really happy.
Yeah. When you tell everyone, obviously I went to Hawaii on my honeymoon, and everyone was saying, oh, did you go surfing? Did you do this, that, and whatever? I'll tell my dad, and he goes, oh, did you run into Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Did you run into Dog the Bounty Hunter?
We did not.
Oh, that's a shame.
We did not.
I'm looking at the poster to Valley Girl right now, and it looks like Nicolas Cage has multicolored hair,
yep.
Is wearing a waistcoat with a tie and no shirt. So I'm immediately on board with this movie based on that alone. I want to see him in that outfit.
It's that kind of early 80s. As long as you have a item of smart clothing on you somewhere, or one to two items of smart clothing, you can do whatever you want with the rest of your body.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we should bring that rule back.
Yeah, I'll go around. I'll go around in a sexy little cutaway.
Yeah,
as long as I'm wearing my top hat.
It's, yeah, it's fine. Top hat, t-shirt, wide fronts.
One sock, just the one.
Yeah. But let's get, so Nicolas Cage, that's your Cage link. I'll try and come up with a jingle for the Cage link.
Oh yeah, I like it. Yeah, we should totally come up with that.
Yeah. But anyway, Nicolas Cage sadly does not star in Clueless. I wish he did, but he doesn't. But there are lots of other great people in this film, including a young Paul Rudd.
Yeah, Paul Rudd, who looks exactly the same as he does now.
I know. What a bastard.
So yeah, this movie's got like an amazing little cast of people in it, doesn't it? So Alicia Silverstone is Cher in this movie, our lead character, spoiled and entitled, but with a heart of gold at the end of it.
She's the one who's clueless. She's the titular clueless person.
She is the one who is the clueless one. And then in terms of like other big names, we've got Brittany Murphy, who plays Ty. We've got Paul Rudd, plays Josh, who is the stepbrother of Alicia Silverstone.
But Donald they're Faison, definitely not AKA related. Turk.
They're definitely not related, thankfully. This isn't a Game of Thrones moment in this movie, because they do eventually, spoiler alert, they get together.
Yeah, they get it on. That's what the whole film is about.
Yes. Although, is that really what it's about?
No, it's about her being clueless and then working out that she's clueless. It's actually, I think, more of a journey of self-discovery than it is a romantic film.
Yeah.
But it still has that romance attached to it, because it's that makes her see it, of kind of being in love with an older man.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And then we have another appearance from Jeremy Sisto.
I know. I was going to mention that. It's the angry man from Waitress.
Yeah, yeah. Who I think I mentioned in that episode that I love Jeremy Sisto as an actor. So I'm very pleased to watch Clueless, because like he's really good at playing like the bastard character.
Yeah.
But like he's really good at playing like not bastards as well. But for some reason, like all of the big movies that he's been in terms of like the most memorable roles he's put in, he's been these sort of like bellends, effectively.
Yeah.
What was
his role in this again? I watched it actually like over a week ago, so my memory of it isn't as fresh as usual.
He's like the jerk potential boyfriend love interest guy.
Oh, that's right. And then he tries to kiss her in the car and she's like, hell no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's him. One movie that I love from Jeremy Sisto is a film that came out a few years ago that's kind of like a cyberpunk movie called 1.0. And it's all this kind of like dystopian future where this guy receives this package inside his apartment and he opens it up and it's empty. But then sort of like weird things start happening to him, and it's all about sort of like, I don't want to spoil it too much because it's genuinely phenomenal. And if I say too much about it, it'll ruin it. But like it's a sort of like look at the future of technology and advertisements.
Oh, cool.
And it's a really interesting film to watch. So I highly recommend it. It's super creepy. It's got like everyone's favorite creepy German Udo Kier in it as well.
Oh yeah.
Who like turns up in everything. And Deborah Unger as well, who turns up in quite a lot of interesting films as well. And it's really good.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating film. It's definitely not worth watching in this podcast because there's very little romance in the film.
Damn it.
But yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
I cut you off before you were properly talking about Donald Faison, a.k.a. Turk from Scrubs.
A.k.a. the funny one from Scrubs.
This is pre-Scrubs. You know, I used to love Scrubs in about year 10. So sort of 2004, 2003-04, I was really into Scrubs. And this is still pre-streaming, pre-downloading. So like someone at school, everyone bought like one series of the box sets and then we all clubbed together and had them all and like could watch them kind of communally. It was a really nice kind of bonding experience
with the other
guys at school. But yeah, it was a very popular show that I think just went on too long and lost its way, but was genuinely funny for about three or four seasons. The main funniness being the kind of bromance between him and Zach Braff.
Yeah, I think like I like early Scrubs quite a lot. And like you said, it's one of those things we used to watch at uni all the time. But I just found eventually like JD's character was getting more and more awful as it went on. And like it became harder and harder and harder to watch that show. Even though they sort of like they started bringing the focus more towards other characters like Dr. Cox and people like that.
Yeah, I enjoyed Dr. Cox's story more, actually. He became sort of more of a complex and nuanced character overall as the time went on, and you realised he was a bastard, but he had good reason to be, but it wasn't cheap either, kind of trying to be like, oh, he suffered in his previous life, so therefore he's a bastard. It's actually, it deals with his character and stuff very well. Him and the relationship with his wife was always really interesting as well.
Yeah, they're incredibly funny. Did you ever watch the show that the people who did Scrubs did afterwards?
No, I never did.
Cougar Town was great. Really funny show with Courtney Cox and the gay kid from Easy A as Courtney Cox's son.
Oh, that guy. I love that guy.
And Dr. Cox's wife turns up in it as like the best friend of Courtney Cox and like is in it all the time. It's a really great show.
Cool.
Never really got the recognition it deserved. It was very funny.
I'll have to check it out. But yeah, they got very lazy with JD's character development, and that like they kept they couldn't let him be happy with a woman, and the only way that they could think of to kind of throw in some jeopardy for his relationships was to just make him seem a bit rubbish and kind of like end relationships without any good reason or whatever, and it just felt really cheap and stupid, I think.
Yeah, he just would be a jerk to women for no good reason.
Yeah.
And then that would be it.
Whereas JD and Carla's relationship was always really fun, and their like kind of relationship issues felt a lot more real and engaging, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the show should have just focused on the Todd.
Yeah.
As the main character.
Love that guy.
And everybody would have loved it, and it would have gone on for like 20 seasons.
What is that guy doing now?
Go on, I don't know. Let's have a look.
Appearing in what, Kid Rock videos or something, probably. I don't know.
I hope he has more.
He's got to have a cameo in Sensations. We could get him in as like one of the contestants who like loses in the first or second round, and he's just like
yeah, he
in
could
his
be
pants.
In Robert Mascio. Let's have a look at what else he's been up to. So he's been in an episode of Bones. In a film called Lethal Seduction.
That sounds like a porno.
He's in an episode of Cougar Town.
Cool.
But that's kind of it. He was in, I mean, Scrubs went on for a long time, didn't it?
Yeah.
Through to like 2010. And so, yeah. And then since then, he's been in the odd thing here and there. Let's have a little look at... if it'll load. Lethal Seduction. High school senior Mark Richards has never minded his overprotective widowed mother Tanya and is a good son to her as he prepares to go off to Princeton in the fall. When he, and I'm waiting for the summary to load here.
Maybe
when
that's
he, when he comes under the spell of the rapacious, manipulative older woman Carissa Kensington, he finds himself in the middle of two strong, unreasonable women, one of whom is insane.
This sounds as bad as The Room.
I just love that final line in it, one of whom is insane. Totally on board
just
with
throw
that.
It in. And that's almost like the same as saying maybe Johnny is a vampire.
Maybe Johnny is a vampire. yeah, I think we need to watch this. I don't know what role he has in it. He's not very high up the list.
Oh, god damn it. Is there anyone else recognizable in it?
There is actually, yeah. So it's got Amanda Detmer in it, who you might recognize. I'm just waiting for the might recognize her from Final Destination. She's one of the people in Final Destination.
I've never seen it.
Which is, yeah, it's a really fun horror movie. I'm just seeing what else she was in. Just waiting for it to load. She's apparently in You, Me, and Dupree.
Okay. Is that some kind of Ben Stiller vehicle?
Yeah, it's a Wilson movie.
Yeah.
Hijinks, as you'd expect. But yeah, so it's got one other person in it. I don't know what the role the Todd has in this movie, but maybe we should investigate and see if it's worthy.
I think we need to find out. Cool, yeah. But Donald Faison, I can't remember seeing him in anything else. So it was really nice to see him popping up in Clueless as a young, cheeky guy who often, even though he didn't have that much screen time or that many lines, every time he had a line, it was funny. And he was offering some kind of wisdom and something that drove the plot along. So hats off to him.
Yeah, he's great in this movie. He's really good fun.
He I think has the line where he says, street slang is an increasingly valid form of expression.
Yeah, he's and there's that great bit where he's where they're driving and they accidentally get onto the freeway.
Yeah,
and he's just freaking out with them in the car. It's really good.
Yeah, the freeway, is it that it has no speed limit, or does it vary from state to state?
I think it's got a speed limit, doesn't it?
I don't know.
I know that the autobahns in Germany don't have speed limits.
Yeah,
but I thought that the freeways in America did have speed limits. They were just significantly higher than your normal road traffic.
Than your average. But interestingly, in Hawaii, the speed limits were very, very low everywhere that we went, which is good. We found that most people were driving sort of 5 to 10 above the speed limit. But yeah, even on like the major highways, I never saw it get above 55. Most of the time it'd be like 45 or 40, depending on the terrain.
Do you know why that is?
Why?
It's because it makes it easier for Dog the Bounty Hunter to catch people.
this is true, yeah. It's all because of Dog. You know, he's like 65.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's quite an old guy. And he was in, when he was young, he went to prison for murder and did his time and came out. And then he was a bounty hunter. And then eventually, somehow, someone picked him up for a TV show when he was like 50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And seeing that on the Nicolas Cage thing reminded me of Charlie Brooker's description of Dog the Bounty Hunter in one of his old Guardian columns about TV back in the day as saying that if a penis could choose its own wardrobe, it would look like Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, I remember that, actually.
Classic. Imagine if Dog the Bounty Hunter was in Clueless. I guess he'd be some kind of pervy teacher or something.
Or just him instead of Paul Rudd.
Yeah. But so the teachers in Clueless, there's a kind of subplot where the teachers get together, but it serves absolutely nothing to the plot of Cher discovering that she's clueless. Or did I miss something?
I think it's more to do with her proving herself as like a matchmaker.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's in the Jane Austen text, isn't it? It's like she's the matchmaker.
Yeah,
but it's a kind of always the bridesmaid thing, and I don't think that actually shone through well in the film. It felt more about just kind of her, that it was more about her kind of valley girl cluelessness than about her being matchmaker.
Yeah, I agree. I think like there's some scenes of it in there. So her relationship with Ty, for instance, really sort of brings it home. But overall, it's more to do with her as a character and how she develops. And how she sort of like changes her mindset and her attitude towards life in general, for certain.
Yeah. But that side of it, I think, was good. It's just, again, the literary adaptation thing. It's always really interesting how it plays out, isn't it? And in this one, obviously, you don't have to know anything about the source text or anything really to enjoy it, because it was still just like a fun film with a lot of snappy lines as well. Again, like a lot of these films, they always have kind of memorable lines and a lot of like very, very good, funny little scenes in isolation. But what I think I also really liked about this one was that there was nothing that was too kind of vulgar or crude or like disgusting or gross out. There wasn't any kind of gross out moments. Like in a lot of the later films, like which one is it with the pubes on the pizza?
Oh, that's She's All That.
She's All That, yeah. I feel like Clueless started all this stuff, and then those films had to take it to the next level. So then by the time you get to American Pie, it's all dick jokes. But, like, yeah, I felt like Clueless was a bit more innocent in that regard, and it was kind of refreshing in that way. You weren't waiting for some disgusting thing to happen like you often are with these teen comedies.
Yeah, I think, it definitely comes from how early it was released in comparison to some of the other movies, because American Pie was the same year as She's All That and 10 Things I Hate About You, wasn't it?
Yes, 1999.
The same year that some of the best albums of all time were released as well.
Yeah.
Such as Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile, which is possibly my favourite album ever. But also the sort of like of horrible teen bro comedies, I suppose.
Mm. An interesting year.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, obviously it's the 2000s when it starts to tip into kind of just really gross out territory. And then Tom Green appears.
Oh, Tom Green. Did you ever see his movie?
Which one?
What's it called? The one that he sort of did on his own. Cost a load of money and made very little money back.
Oh, no. I don't believe I did. No.
What was it called? Freddy Got Fingered.
Oh, yeah, called. Yeah. No, I didn't realize that he was the one behind that. But yeah, that's the kind of film I was thinking of when I was talking about the gross out thing. It was just endless gross outs. So the kind of Jackass culture coming through into fiction comedy films. Because I used to enjoy a bit of Jackass back in the day, but yeah, there was a definite gross out culture in the early 2000s that these kind of teen comedies were leading up to.
Yeah, there definitely was. I think what worked about Jackass was that it was completely non-contextual. There was no plot. It was just, here's some men. They're going to go do horrible things to each other and you're going to laugh at them.
Yeah, that really was it.
And it falls down when that then gets translated into trying to create some kind of semblance of plot, because you just can't do it. What was the Welsh version of Jackass?
Oh, I know. Oh, one of my friends at school used to love that. Dirty Sanchez.
Dirty Sanchez.
And it was always on like MTV2 really, really late at night, at like 11:30.
I could never get on board with that. That was too vulgar for my tastes.
That's the kind of thing my dad, MJ, would fall asleep in front of the TV and then he'd wake up and Dirty Sanchez would be on. He'd be like, it's time to go to bed now. Yeah, the only one I remember from Dirty Sanchez was they all stood there naked and lined up and had got one of their girlfriends to try and work out which one was which by feeling their private parts. It was really quite disgusting.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a particularly enjoyable show.
Yeah,
I remember there was lots of nudity in Dirty Sanchez, but I only watched like two episodes and then I was like, no, I can't deal with this.
Yeah. Whereas Jackass, the nudity was, I'd say, occasional at best. And whenever it was there, you felt like it was justified.
Justified nudity. I always felt that Jackass in general came from like a good-hearted place, if that doesn't sound too weird. Like, they just kind of enjoyed putting pranks on each other. And then like when they involved other people, apart from Bam Margera, who was often horrible to his own family, it was all done in a more sort of like enjoyable, lighthearted way. So when they'd like pretend to put a baby on top of the car and drive off and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where it's more just like what you'd see in a regular prank show. Whereas like some of the sort of imitators would just be like really horrible to people for no good reason.
Yeah, it's like that's kind of, I guess, what I was getting at by saying that Clueless is relatively innocent and then the next kind of teen comedies all take it to the next level until eventually it's a thing that people are done with and then culture kind of goes in circles. But it's always like people have to take things to the next level, don't they? And it's interesting to look at when you look at films about how it relates to other films of a similar ilk, I guess. I'm wondering what the next level up would be from The Bridges of Madison County.
More boring. They just remove everything but the dialogue. They don't change any scenes. It is just one solid 90-minute take of two people sitting at a kitchen table whilst they're waiting for a stew to cook.
Yeah, and you get Meryl Streep sighing. And then you get Clint Eastwood crying in the rain. And it just keeps going back and forth between those two things, like an art house film.
I'd watch that.
You would love that. That'd be your favourite.
Totally, as long as there was some really loud booming music, then I'd be totally bored with it.
It'd be that, but with the the really, really loud from Black Swan.
Or have you seen the Social Network?
That scene where they're rowing and the Hall of the Mountain King is playing, that made me laugh out loud because it was stupid
with the aggressive industrial rock version of Hall of the Mountain King.
And that was the point at which Claire was like, this film is really stupid.
I really love that film. I think it's a great character study of the kind of people that created Facebook and like the lengths that Mark Zuckerberg would go to screw people over.
Yeah.
And like, I think a lot of people went into it thinking that it was going to be a more endearing look at how Facebook was made. It's like, no, this is a very horrible, horrible movie about deception and about immaturity.
Yeah. I thought it was well done. I think the main thing was that the performances were really, really good and really captivating. Everyone in that film did a really, really great job. But yeah, that rowing bit was completely pointless. And it really added made me chuckle.
Literally nothing to the movie. And for that reason, I love it. And I'll forever love Aaron Sorkin for putting it in.
Yeah. But in a way, sometimes you look at a scene that adds nothing to the plot and you go, well, what's the point in that? And sometimes you look at it and you go, there's so little point to it that is the point of it, and that is a work of genius.
Yes, much like the drug deal scene in The Room.
Yeah, or the 7-minute long dance scene in Spider-Man 3.
yes. That's legit my favourite part of that movie, though.
Yeah.
Genius. I think if that part didn't exist, I'd have no need to go back and watch that film again.
Yeah. We should talk about the first of those Spider-Man films at some point. The boy Tobey Maguire. And
it's got the upside down kiss. It's that Chad iconic Kroger song. Moment. Unless your dad a hero conceivers.
Not gonna stand here and play my PRS unplugged on a roof.
I'd love it if someone got like the unedited audio of that scene and you just had that really horrible twangy guitar sound of an unplugged electric guitar and then just the noise of traffic underneath.
Yeah, it probably wasn't even on a real rooftop. It was probably in the studio.
Do you reckon it was done on the same roof that The Room was filmed?
It's possible, yeah. It was around the same time, was it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe it was the same roof. That would be amazing.
That would be incredible. So what else do we have to say about Clueless? Let's see, the dad character I wrote down is quite interesting. He's like, he reminded me of Justin Theroux, but he was kind of old and angry. Or as the Americans say, Justin Theroux, but I refuse to accept that.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
The fun fact for you about the dad, played by Dan Hedaya, he is also the main villain in Arnold Schwarzenegger's Commando.
No way.
Yeah, he is the evil dictator general who's trying to forge a military coup and who kidnaps Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. And then it's going to be all like, and he puts on this really terrible accent in Commando, by the way. And he's sort of like just saying, if you don't help me do this, I will kill your daughter.
You know, if they're saying kill as keel, you know they're bad news.
Yeah, you know they're a wrong'un. Yeah. He does not meet a good fate. He gets shot by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
In the dick.
Yes. unfortunately, not in the dick. That would have been great. But he's not the big bad of it in the end. So, like, the final fight is between him and a character called Bennett, who is one of a former member of Arnold Schwarzenegger's special forces crew, who then left to go and join the bad guys. And they have a very dramatic fight in the sort of like tunnels underneath this military complex. And it ends with Arnold Schwarzenegger throwing a pipe at Bennett, and it gets embedded through Bennett's stomach into a big like steam cylinder, which then lets a load of steam out. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger offers up possibly his best one-liner, where he turns around and goes, "Let off some steam, Bennett."
I thought it was going to be a fart gag.
Oh, if only. No, I think that might be the best. The best. In terms of like the proximity of one-liners, though, Predator has it better, because you see Arnold Schwarzenegger knock down a wall and say "knock knock" to two people before killing them. And then throw a knife at another person and get him, this person, embedded into a wall with a knife, and then go, "stick around."
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I respect that.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is genuinely a world treasure.
Yeah. What would you do if you met him?
I would give him a hug immediately, like, and then not let him go until security took took me off him. I don't think I could control myself if I ever had the chance to meet him.
I think he'd hug you back for a few seconds at least.
He would, yeah. He'd definitely be someone who would be happy to hug back, but I think it would reach that uncomfortable moment where he realised that I would not be letting go anytime soon. And then he'd be forced to take measures.
We should make it happen.
Yeah, I really want to meet Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's great.
Yeah.
Good dude.
So what else to say about Clueless? The skate guy, the skater boy who Ty, Brittany Murphy's character, he obviously really likes her, and then she rebukes him because of Cher's trying to get her to go out with someone else, and then eventually they get together. And his name is Travis Birkenstock.
Yes, yeah.
Which is one of the best and most hilarious character names I've ever heard.
And yeah, so he plays like this. So yeah, so Ty is a new girl at the school, who Brittany Murphy takes, played by Brittany Murphy, and then who Cher takes under her wing and sort of starts training how to be like a cool kid. And she's like immediately attracted to Travis the Stoner, played by a guy called Brecken Meyer, who was also in Road Trip, speaking of gross out comedy movies.
Oh, that film was terrible.
Yes. And who also played John in the Garfield movie as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. I never saw it, but wow. He must really hate Mondays.
He must really hate Mondays. Do you think he wakes up every Monday and is like, oh, I just remembered I was in the Garfield movie.
Yeah, and as well as Road Trip, there was also Euro Trip. I'd forgotten about that film, but I have just remembered it and it's coming back to me. Did you ever see that film?
I avoided it like the plague.
I think it's a real dog shit film, but there's one bit where there's like a bunch of skinheads and they have to go on a bus to France, and they get to France and they're driving on the wrong side of the road, and there's a really hilarious scene where they're just driving the bus down France and they're on the wrong side of the road, like giving the finger to all the other drivers, and you're like, you'd get arrested.
Well, you know, the French police are well known for being incredibly laid back about people breaking the law. They're definitely not really brutal about people breaking the law, particularly foreigners.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah, they're definitely super chill with that kind of behaviour. No, I never watched Euro Trip. I decided I would rather not watch that film.
Yeah, you're not missing out.
But yeah, so Mr. Stoner, John from Garfield, skater boy, he and Ty, played by Brittany Murphy, have this kind of obvious like attraction to one another, but Cher sort of like pushes her down this path to become cooler. And that part of the plot, I think, is probably the most integral part of the movie as a whole, I suppose, to her becoming a more clued in person, because it eventually reaches this point where Cher realizes that she's kind of created a monster when it comes to Ty, and like Ty is incredibly cruel to her, and she sort of takes a step back, and it's only then that she starts sort of like changing her, like what she believes in, and changing her priorities and things like that, which yeah, it's quite interestingly and quite delicately done, I suppose.
Their relationship was the most interesting part of the film for me, for sure. Much more interesting than the romantic plot with Paul Rudd, which you thought was going to happen, but you weren't 100% sure. So that was also good. But yeah, her relationship with Ty was interesting, because when Ty first appears, you feel like because Cher is attractive and popular and a bit clueless and the Valley Girl, you expect her to just kind of bully Ty and to push her away, and to kind of make fun of her in front of the other kids to try and stay popular. But the popularity model that appears in a lot of other high school comedies isn't really here in the same way. It's not about popularity. And I liked that, and I found that refreshing. Even though she's trying to train Ty to kind of be cool and popular, she's allowing her the chance to be that rather than being, you know, bitchy and repressive about it, if that makes sense. And I was sort of pleasantly surprised by that and a bit taken aback by it.
Yeah, it doesn't really have the same sort of like focus on the cliques that a lot of high school movies have. So although they do sort of like point out all the different cliques at the high school, there's never that sort of like feeling as though these are groups that are never allowed to interact. And in a way, it kind of makes it seem more real. So even though Clueless is an incredibly cartoonish movie and it's very vibrant and like unrealistic, the sort of way that they built the high school as a whole actually feels a lot more real, at least in terms of my experiences of like being at sixth form college. And they're like, even if you do have these different cliques of people, they can still be friends of one another in between like everything else.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely felt like that was a strong message, and especially at like the parties and stuff. Everyone was at the party, everyone was hanging out, everyone was having a good time, you know, and then they steal a snowman at the end for no reason.
But yeah, like it's nice, and like, yeah, so this isn't sort of like a Mean Girls situation, where in Mean Girls they like take in the new girl and like they morph her into something awful.
Although again, do you think Mean Girls sort of took a cue from this, maybe?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think Clueless is a real sort of like groundbreaker for those kind of high school movies, and like it does kind of feel like a stepping stone between like films like The Breakfast Club and films like 10 Things I Hate About You.
In the 80s ones were all very sincere.
Yeah.
Even though they were very, very funny. Like in The Breakfast Club, I think is genuinely very, very funny, in parts, especially with the teacher being like, come in here, I'm cracking some skulls, that kind of thing. That always makes me really, really chuckle. But all of them come across as very, very sincere, apart from 16 Candles, which just comes across as very racist. But
I have not seen that movie in years. But yeah, I don't have particularly fond memories of that one.
But yeah, I feel like the way when you got into the 90s and these kind of films started emerging, the sincerity of the 80s hadn't completely disappeared. But yeah, there was a new kind of refreshing cheesiness and cartoonishness. You use the word cartoonishness, which I think is right. There was a pleasing cartoonishness that I think just makes them a very easy and fun watch.
Yeah, for certain. And yeah, I think that's kind of where both the strengths and the weaknesses of Clueless lie, in that like this is a movie that I don't know how much you'd get out of it if you went into it without the nostalgia of having watched it when you were younger.
Yeah, and I think that's why I couldn't like really love it. I felt like it was fine and I enjoyed watching it, but it didn't really stay with me and it didn't make me laugh out loud and that kind of thing. Whereas I think if I had watched it when I was younger, it probably would have had more of an effect.
Yeah, because I didn't watch it when I was really young, but I remember watching it like with other people when I was relatively young. And so like I do have fairly fond memories of it in that regard. And so like it does still have that kind of nostalgia fix for me. Whereas like, even though when I watched it, when it was feeling a little bit dated, just a few years later, cause I mean, when it came out, I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
So like I probably watched it when I was about in my mid teens, for instance. But it still has sort of like quite a lot of like iconic moments to it that like you pick up on, but perhaps now so far down the line with everything that's happened in movies since then, the fact that it kind of straddles the line between two very, very clearly defined styles of film perhaps means it doesn't have as much as an impact on people who don't sort of take all of those cues. So like, I don't know how much enjoyment, for instance, people would get out of her like computer software to design an outfit these days, which is like one of my favorite scenes.
When you said it was dated, that was something that I felt like I had to mention, because there's that, and then she's got this like bling mobile phone before mobile phones were really a thing, and that kind of thing. It's funny. It's very, very funny in that way to observe. But yeah, she's like, I designed my outfit on the computer,
which yeah is great, and like you can do that on like ASOS now.
Yeah,
I love the fact that like the share software has become the normal.
ASOS might as well sponsor this podcast, because they're the only place that I can get jeans that fit, or that fit how I like them. Anyway,
ASOS jeans are really good, actually. You're totally right on that.
Yeah.
This message brought to you by ASOS.
Yeah, other brands
go
of jeans.
Go to ASOS now. Go to ASOS and put in the code Big Boys Don't Dress Badly to get 10% off your ASOS order.
Yeah. Yeah, for real, real talk. ASOS jeans are great.
Yeah.
Like, I love ASOS jeans. They're really comfy. They fit really well. Their skinny jeans are like the perfect skinniness.
Yeah.
So like I wear their super skinny jeans all the time, and like they're not too tight. They're not so tight that like you can't move your lower legs.
Even a larger man like myself can wear an ASOS skinny jean quite comfortably.
So get on those jeans from ASOS. They're well good.
Or at least buy them, because I'm a 38 waist, and like when that's kind of the upper limit of what you can buy in a high street shop as a man. But rare, you know, often you go in and find out they only go to 36. They have a couple of 38s, and then the leg is too short. It's a nightmare. None of that with ASOS.
What I really love about ASOS is that they do a 33-inch waist, which is normally perfect for me, whereas most places it's 32 or 34.
Yeah.
And it's like too tight or too big. Whereas for me, ASOS is my Goldilocks porridge. it's really good. Some of their stuff's not great, but their jeans are awesome.
Yeah.
So if you need a new pair of jeans, go to ASOS.
Right. Now that we've spent an hour talking about ASOS, give us your fucking money.
Yeah, give us your money, ASOS. We know you've got it. You must have loads of money.
Yeah. So our next like campaign has got to be, tweet ASOS and get them to give us money.
Yeah, totally. You definitely need to do that. Like maybe they could sponsor Sensations as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So like
promotional ASOS considerations furnished by ASOS. Yeah, in the credits.
Yeah, they could do all of like the bibs that people are using when they're eating the hot dogs.
Although, having seen what Guy Fieri wears most of the time, I think it's quite outlandish. Like you wouldn't be able to get those kind of fiery shirts on ASOS.
Dude, you need to look on ASOS more. There is some absolute shite on ASOS.
Have you typed in Guy Fieri into ASOS?
No, but I think I might have to do that now. Or like fire shirts into ASOS.
Yeah.
And have a look at what comes up. Let's have a little look-see.
They could probably even sell you some like FACO frosted tips to put on your head.
Oh, they blatantly could. Yeah, ASOS does sell some absolute junk, and I love it.
Because I think for a while they were selling those clip-on man buns.
Yeah.
Might get one of those.
They do horrendous, absolutely horrendous like suits as well.
Yeah, I've never bought a suit from there.
They do some grotesque stuff, and I totally love them for it. Unfortunately I've never bought it, but I nearly bought like a neon green suit on there, which was in the sale once, and was like, oh dude, when else am I gonna have the chance to buy a neon green suit?
How much was it?
It was only like 50 quid.
Oh, that's a steal.
Yeah, it would have been a total investment. As very rarely do I regret not making purchases, but right there, I really did. Oh, no, I can't find anything particularly horrendous just with a quick Google search.
God damn it.
Although I have found this. Can you see that? Or is it too bright?
Is that... Oh, okay. Yep. That's like that is some kind of onesie.
Some kind of funky onesie.
Yeah.
Covered in like a floral pattern.
Floral pattern onesie. Nothing wrong with that.
But like it looks like it's that kind of horrible material that would give you static shocks.
Oh, okay. It looks like it's worth the pain. A neon suit would be worth the pain of static shocks.
Oh yeah, for certain. There's also this. Oh no, it won't let me open it. I found some Pinterest page. There's something that kind of looks like, you know, have you watched The Mummy, the Brendan Fraser?
Yeah, movie? Yeah.
You know that there's the female mummy, ancient Egyptian woman, and she gets painted with ink so that it shows that if anyone touches her, then it shows up.
Yeah.
There's an outfit here that basically looks like that.
Hey, you know, like Halloween's coming up.
It's true. Halloween is coming up. And I think maybe I should do that. Apart from rather than wearing this jumpsuit, I do you just cover. I've lost you.
I'm still here. You just oh yeah, I've lost you now. Oh no, it was going so well.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now. You were going cool. A bit slow, but now it sounds like you're back to normal.
Okay, okay. I turned off my screen. Yeah. I don't know whether it's worth you being the same in case there's some kind of issue with our internet.
Yeah, let me try that. As I think that was, although if I remember rightly, the last time I did that, that was when we were getting the double Johnston.
Oh, it's true. That does run the risk of the double Johnston. Well, it seems to be okay now, so maybe we should just leave it as is.
Yeah, like the cursor's beach balling now anyway, so.
Oh, okay. So after that brief, like, technical issue, welcome back, everybody. clearly, ASOS was unhappy with us criticizing their wares. So I think we better stop, because otherwise ASOS will send another DDoS attack on us.
Yeah, the ASOS DDoS. I don't mind what they do as long as they give us their fucking money.
Although I have just found the worst best thing. I can't show it to you. But it's a tie-dye vest with "die hippie scum" written on it.
That is fantastic.
Which you know, I might actually be tempted to buy that. That is exactly the kind of... Oh wait, no, I found something even better. Are you going to get married, but are you worried about the military catching you?
Obviously. I mean, it was at the back of my mind all the time. On my wedding day, you were there, you know. There was definitely a kind of an atmosphere of worrying that we might get stormed at any point.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell, but before the wedding, you were like, Rob, keep an eye out for soldiers coming in here to try and capture us. You wouldn't have had that worry if you had this suit, which is a nice three-piece suit, apart from it's in camouflage.
Awesome. Yes.
So, I mean, that's possibly the most practical suit ever, because if you're going, like, out into the woods... and you're worried that the military are going to find you. That way you can have a nice woodland wedding, or you can have a nice business meeting in the woods. And then if people do come to try and find you, you can quite easily hide and then evade them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a multi-purpose. Really serves to just highlight the quality that ASOS provides.
Excellent.
You know, you can go there for comfy jeans. You can go there for your die hippie scum vests. And you can go there to shop for your military wedding.
Of course, yeah. If you're having a military wedding, ASOS is obviously the place to go.
Yeah, definitely. Get on board. I don't know if they do a camouflage tie or a camouflage shirt to go with it, but you imagine that you would have the full camo gear.
I bet you Arnie has those in his wardrobe.
He's got to, doesn't he? He's got to. Do you reckon you should get, like, a camouflage top hat as well?
Yep, definitely.
If you're going for a nice high quality wedding, you've got to get the top hats on.
Yeah. I very much regret not doing this at my own wedding. do we have anything else to say on Clueless, really? I don't have much more to say other than there's the emotional dad speech. So obviously includes that very, very important element of the high school comedy. It wasn't as good as the 10 Things I Hate About You baseball dad, obviously, but it was still pretty good. Especially as he was quite a scary dad. He was a more scary dad than most of the teen comedy dads. So it was when you got the speech from him, you felt like it was more of a payoff.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then was it She's All That that also had the dad speech?
Yep, that had a dad speech as well. There's always, like, the mum's dead, so you have to get the dad speech.
Yeah, and then it's like, it's a man showing his emotions, so it must be important.
Yeah, you know it's important. And I wrote down here that the narration oddly makes you warm to her, even though she's obviously a rich bitch. there's a lot of, like, of her narrating over the top at various points, which I guess is also there to make it feel kind of Jane Austen-ish, because a lot of the I am going to assume that the source text is in first person. I don't know because I haven't read it. But I think that was supposed to make it to help that aspect of the adaptation work its way into the film. And I guess that part of it succeeded.
Yeah, I think I do think that the narration works very well in this film because it helps keep the structure together and it helps give you like an inside track on her mind during parts where she's putting up appearances, which really helps ground her as a character and it really helps keep you on her side, which is great. So yeah, it's a very well crafted movie.
Yeah, I think it's one I'll probably come back to once every couple of years, every 2 or 3 years, looking for a light comedy to watch at a chill time. Pop it on. Why not?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a movie that I watch every so often. It's one of Katie's favourite movies, and I really enjoy watching it as well.
Cool.
So we watch it probably once a year, I suppose, probably on average. So I've got a little bit of fun trivia here.
Okay.
If Clueless ever comes up in your pub quiz.
Yeah, could do.
If you have a Clueless round of your pub quiz, if you're so inclined. So actors who auditioned for this film for the role of Cher, there was also Reese Witherspoon.
Yep.
And Zooey Deschanel.
No way.
Yeah.
She was a thing in 1995.
Yeah, apparently so.
Because the first thing I remember her in is Almost Famous, and that's got to be, what, 2001?
Yeah, that must have been around then. She was in Election. I don't know when that was. That's a good film. And in terms of other people that went for roles in it, Owen Wilson went for Travis the Skater Boy.
No way.
Yeah, as did Seth Green.
Ah. I felt like the guy who actually got it kind of looked a bit like Paul Dano, and that endeared me to him.
Oh, Paul Dano.
But I could have seen Owen Wilson in that role.
Yeah, he could have done that well. He could have done that well. So everyone knows that Paul Rudd is an unaging man.
Yeah.
However, in terms of the oldest people of that group of young actors in this movie, Stacey Dash, who plays Dion, was actually 3 years older than Paul Rudd.
Blimey.
Yeah, so Paul Rudd was not the oldest person, even though he was like the oldest of the young'uns.
How old was she? What's the gap between her age and the age she's playing?
I don't know at the time. That would require mathematics that are far beyond my comprehension, Perry.
Oh, this time of night. Jeez.
Well, this time of night. I'm not counting at this time of night. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, she's 3 years older than handsome Paul Rudd.
Cool. What about ugly Paul Rudd?
What about ugly? There's no such thing, is there?
No, obviously there's not.
How dare you even suggest it?
I was about to mention that. Yeah.
Okay. You do. You
the
do,
the mighty yeah. mighty Bosstones.
Yeah.
And their singer is a little bit of a proto Guy Fieri. I'd venture to say, he's got the sticky up hair. He's got a similar bulk and presence.
Yeah, I think you know, there's some definite similarities here. Do you reckon we can find a place for the mighty mighty Bosstones?
Yeah. They can't be at the end with Smashed Biscuits because that's too much of a kind of encroaching into their territory, and we've already shoehorned Robbie Williams into it. But
yeah, we can't go any further than that.
They could appear kind of midway through, maybe like they could do some guest judging or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, as long as they're announced with someone going, "Oh my God, it's the mighty mighty Bosstones," just one person.
Yeah. Or we could get them to like follow around one of the comedy characters with their horns doing comedy pop music.
Well, that's where the alt-right could come in.
Ah.
Because they could just be followed around by a band playing like...
Speaking of the alt-right, while watching the film Clueless, it features the song All Right by Supergrass. And I imagined in my head while it was playing on the film soundtrack that it would go... See our friends, see the sights, feel all right. And that made me chuckle to myself. That maybe it could be...
you can be all.
Yeah, that it could be, the lyrics could easily be changed for it to become a neo-Nazi anthem. Poor old Supergrass.
Did you see that the creator of Pepe the Frog is now suing various fascists?
I believe he has won some kind of lawsuit against the people who made a children's book, a fascist children's book with Pepe in it. I think he won the lawsuit against them, at least. I don't think he's winning the lawsuit against all of the guys on Twitter who have Pepe avatars who are spewing all their completely useless content into the world. But he's doing his best, and good luck to him.
Yeah, fingers crossed, because, you know, the more money you take away from these scumbags, the better.
Yeah, his name's Matt Furie, spelled F-U-R-I-E. And yeah, if you want to buy some very hilarious comics, buy his books on Twitter, because that'll be a kick in the ass of the alt-right.
Yeah, definitely.
He's good. Look him up.
He's a good one. We like him.
Yeah.
We don't like the alt-right.
No, we do not. Or the mainstream right either, to be fair.
But we do like All Right by Supergrass.
No, we do. Speaking of which, do you want a Jacob Rees-Mogg update?
Yes, of course.
He's still a bellend.
Ba, 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 ba. Here's the Jacob Rees-Mogg update.
Welcome like to a hunting horn.
Jacob, welcome to this week's Jason Jacob Rees-Mogg update.
Jason Rees-Mogg.
Jason.
Oh, that sounds like a terrible action hero, like a sort of Johnny English background character thing.
I'm Jason Rees-Mogg. I'm just imagining Jacob Rees-Mogg, but with like a six pack and a long mullet.
Yeah, and he throws his top hat and like knives come out of it and cut someone, and then it flies back to him.
Anyway, yeah, this week's Jacob Rees-Mogg update. He's still a bellend.
He's still a massive idiot. That's it.
Yeah, that's all we need. Thank you for the update, like, Paddy.
Rees-Mogg watch, still a twat.
It's like Ghost Watch. Did you ever see Ghost Watch?
No.
It was this mockumentary thing that was done by the BBC in the 90s, and it got like a huge number of complaints because it was so scary and people thought that it was real and that there was real poltergeists and stuff like that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we could do that with Jacob Rees-Mogg, and we could just follow him around for an hour.
Yeah, he's pretty scary. Like,
he's still being a bellend.
Whispering into the camera in like a really low light.
3 minutes in, he's buying a croissant. He looked like a bellend buying this croissant. Watch out for this one.
Here we observe him patronising a service worker.
You turned into David Attenborough.
I couldn't help it. It's just in me. Every time I want to narrate anything, I want to do Attenborough.
We should do it more Guy Fieri.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that Jacob Rees-Mogg is a bellend, but he's a bellend.
Oh, even just to get those two people in the same room would be amazing.
Yeah, imagine their conversation.
Or if Guy Fieri came round to Jacob Rees-Mogg's massive house and went into his massive kitchen, where obviously they have a cook that cooks for them because he probably couldn't cook anything himself. But yeah, if he went into Jacob Rees-Mogg's kitchen and started like trying to get him to make traditional roast like English dishes or whatever, and yeah,
I'd love it. That'd I want this good. Show. It would be yeah. We should get Guy Fieri to basically become the When Louis Met,
yeah,
of our generation. So that'd he be goes amazing. Around and tries to teach how to cook, like weirdos and bellends.
Because he's such a sort of amazingly positive and welcoming person. To get him to sort of meet with all like nutty people, like flat earthers and. Yeah, people like that and alt-right people and that kind of thing. Because as well, you feel like he's so kind of nice and positive and cuddly that everyone would accept him. And yeah, you know, like they wouldn't think he's like an undercover cop or something. They'd be like, okay, this is this guy. Yeah, sure, let him in.
Yeah, I think that would work really, really well.
He's wasted on the Food Network.
He is. He deserves his own investigatory journalism. How great would that be?
Yeah.
Here's Guy Fieri on the rise of the neo-Nazi.
And it's the kind of thing that people do at this stage of their career, isn't it? Or after they've had a hit show and obviously a very, very important hit film smash at the box office. That's what you do, isn't it? Or even if it's not film, it's something like at this stage of your career in that age. I think he must be about 50. Maybe.
Yeah, he must be around 50.
And, you know, if you look at other people like that, you've got, you know, Michael Portillo doing his trains thing. You know, it's all stuff like that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think we could definitely find a place for him doing that kind of stuff. The one thing that I'd love for him to do is to do some kind of really, really nasty people. Like if he went to the Westboro Baptists, for instance. And made hot dogs with them. It'd be fascinating TV.
I imagine that hot dogs are banned from the Westboro Baptist Church because they look like penises and encourage homoerotic thoughts.
Well, they follow very random passages of the Bible incredibly strictly, don't they?
Yeah, they very much cherry-pick the bits that they want to use to uphold their insane ideas.
So I wonder whether there's, at some point in the Bible, something about processed meats.
Yeah.
So could they even eat hot dogs? Is that part of the scripture that they believe in?
Well, speaking as someone who went to Catholic school, there is a passage in Leviticus where Jesus visits a hot dog mine.
Blessed be the hot dog miners.
Yeah. For they shall inherit the sauce.
They shall inherit the chili.
So, no, I think hot dogs are probably okay.
Okay, that's all right then.
Yeah. The Westboro Hot Dog Church.
If we ever do like a food pop-up in London, that's what we call
it. Yep. I'm very much down with that. Would you like a side of racism with your Frankfurter, sir?
Would you like some racist relish?
Racist relish. Good times.
I think this could totally take off.
Racist relish, prejudiced pickles, marginalizing mustard.
Kekistan ketchup.
Yeah. So look out for that one coming soon to a Shoreditch near you.
Yeah. It'll be served out of a shipping container.
Out of a shoe, I thought you were going to say then.
Yeah, just a hot dog chucked in a shoe.
Sticking out the top.
Footlongs would be in a boot.
Exactly. A big boot. But surely every hot dog in a shoe is a foot long, because it's if you make it as long as the foot that would go inside the shoe.
I like your thinking here. We could even set up, after the racist hot dog pop-up has done its part, we could then move on to starting a real restaurant called Footlong Hot Dogs.
Yeah.
Where like they're not all necessarily 1 foot long, but they're all served up in shoes.
It's very much a lottery. Depending on you can choose the type of shoe, so you can go slipper, boot, desert boot, trainer, fashionable high heel. You know, you get a lot of shoe options, but you don't get to choose the size. It's very much a lottery, a lucky dip.
Yeah, exactly. So you could end up with a nice like size 13 shoe.
Yep.
With a giant hot dog in it.
Giles Corran is going to fucking love it.
We should totally get in touch and be like, "Oi, this is what we're doing. Yep. Do you like it?
We'll give you. We'll let you keep the shoes."
Yeah. Do you keep the shoe after you've done eating your hot dog?
Yeah. I mean, it would be hard to clean them and reuse them, wouldn't it?
It would, but at the same time, our costs would be astronomical.
Yeah. Sourcing new shoes would be a distribution nightmare. So yeah, I guess we need to have a special shoe washing machine.
Unless we went down the Sweeney Todd route and every so often we just bumped off our customers and took their shoes.
Yeah. So we take their shoes and the shoes that they've just eaten a hot dog out of as well. Yeah. And everyone's a winner.
They form the delicious hot dog meat as well, you see.
Okay. Yeah.
It all works incredibly well.
Yep. I'm down with this.
All right, plan of action.
Nice. So that's a lot of stuff for us to work on this week.
Coming soon to a London restaurant near you. Cannibal racist hot dog shoes.
That sounds like some kind of like art school, first year art school project.
Oh dear. It'll work, I'm telling you.
Good times. So, final judgments on Clueless. What's the rating? The rating scale out of 20.
Ooh. That's a difficult one, actually. I'm trying to think of a good rating scale. How many parts of your outfit out of 20, maybe, or Ooh. Something like that?
Yeah.
Like you have a maximum of 20 parts of your outfit that you can wear. So how complex are you making your high school outfit?
How many items are you going to drag on the computer?
Yeah.
To make up today's outfit. I'm going to give it a 14.
Oh, very good. I was thinking 14 as well.
All right,
so
cool.
We're together on this one.
Yeah, you know, it's solid. It's not up there. It doesn't reach the high echelons, but it's always worth a watch. It's good fun. Inoffensive 90s comedy that bridges the gap between the sincerity of the 80s and the gross outness of the late 90s moving into the 2000s. Well worth your time.
Yeah, for sure. I really love this movie quite a lot, but I can't say that I really get super excited about watching it. But there's just something incredibly comforting about watching Clueless. And like, all the characters are really well developed. It's a really likable movie. And like, there's nothing really to hate about it. I've not met anybody who doesn't like Clueless, but I think if I did, I would probably not like them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you don't like this movie...
If you don't like it, why don't you go join the Westboro Baptist Church?
Exactly. There's no middle ground.
Yeah. That's a good one. So I believe we have one more week before we get into our Halloween festivities for October.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice is yours.
Have we outlined our Halloween activities yet?
We have to ourselves. We haven't announced it officially.
Shall we leave it? Should we leave our listeners in suspense?
Yeah, yeah. I think it has to be. Yeah, we have to do a Stephen King, be masters of suspense.
So we I'm gonna go in for my Radio 4 voice for this bit.
Oh, are you getting a bit Attenborough on me?
I am a little bit, yeah. So, dear listeners, we have plans for you for the month of October. Prepare for some excellent movies, but all will be revealed very soon. Okay, I'm done. There's some good stuff coming up in October. We've got planned for you, but we do have one episode left before we reach that point. And this movie's been a long time coming. I've mentioned it a few times, but I think it's now time to actually get on it. Dear Paddy, we will be watching the Russell Crowe Les Miserables.
Yay! I knew we'd get around to it eventually.
Yeah, I thought now was a good time. Yeah. Good time to get on it. I know it's not like a romantic movie, but there's enough going on there with romance.
There's love in it.
Yeah. And like, it seems to fit quite well with some of the other movies we've watched so far. So yeah, Les Mis.
And I think we have mentioned it on multiple occasions, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. I can't wait to rewatch it. I've not watched it in a while.
That's a good choice. I've not seen it. I've seen it on stage, but never seen any other adaptation of it.
I'm very excited to hear what you think.
Yeah,
because like it's a movie that kind of I don't know if I love or I hate it.
That's good.
Or if I hate love it. So I'm really
You can kind of hate love a film, can't you?
Yeah. I'm super excited to rewatch it and to sing along with Russell Crowe.
Sweet.
It's gonna be great.
Good choice. All right. Well, that's gonna do it for us, I think. So this has been the Big Boys Don't Cry podcast. As ever, if you have anything to share, if you want to, like you did this week, help us out in recasting The Room with old school footballers, stuff like that, we're always up for that.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, so really tweet us that. At Big Boys Don't Pod. Drop us an email at bigboysdon'tcrypodcast@gmail.com.
yeah, get in touch. What did you think of Clueless?
Yeah, let us know.
Who do you think would pull off that amazing outfit at the beginning of the film better, me or Paddy?
Yeah.
Let us know.
Which of us would look good in a neon suit?
Which of us would look good in a camo suit?
Yeah, with matching top hat.
With matching top hat.
Yeah, because the Twitter poll about whether you would be Mark and I would be Johnny or vice versa in the room proved to be inconclusive. But I gave the option of just going, you're tearing me apart. And obviously everyone chose that. So yeah, I obviously need to be more decisive with my Twitter polling.
Do you think I should buy a vest that says Die Hippie Scum on it?
Yes. Oh, no, you mean ask the listeners. Obviously, I think
asking
yes.
The listeners. I want to know what... But from now on, my...
I want to know what love is.
My entire wardrobe is going to be democratically voted on by the listeners of this website, of this podcast.
I fully support this as an important exercise in democracy.
Yeah, you know...
We have to uphold the will of the people.
Are you frustrated with how democracy has panned out for you? Well, this is a vote you can truly believe in. And yeah. Truly reflect your views.
It's your chance to take back control.
I will be giving £350 million a week to ASOS for my wardrobe.
No, they'll be giving it to us for the advertising. How else are we going to fund Sensations?
As it grows steadily and steadily more expensive. Yeah.
All right. We'll be in your ears next week talking about Les Miserables.
Alrighty.
Alright. Boo!
Bye!